Steve. Thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Wednesday, and we're here. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show.
And it's a month away from tax time, so you have to. Is that why you're playing Tax Man?
Yes. It's the 1 month jolt. And now that Donald Trump's taxes have been leaked, I hope you will reveal your taxes.
Yeah, from 2005.
That's fine. I just want to see 1 year's worth of taxes.
Why do you want to see them?
Just to see if you're legit.
Too legit to quit.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
All right. Welcome to the show. It should be a good one, but you know, we think that about every show. We'll see. Get back to us in 3 hours. We'll tell you if it's a good one or not. If you want to dial us up, we're at 312-981-7200. You know what was fun for me? To watch you in near panic mode, not quite panic mode, but near panic mode, because you thought you didn't have your phone with you, and that was fun to watch.
Why do you get such pleasure out of?
Because you were getting like jittery.
That's
like,
someone's misfortune, though, Bill.
I mean, my phone.
All right.
You know, did she get a little sweat form above her brow?
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
First of all, I lose my phone all the time, and 9 out of 10 times, it's already in my purse.
Right. So, knowing that, wouldn't that be the place you'd focus your search on?
I did, but have you looked in my purse? It's hard to find stuff.
Sometimes you want to go to the most important place last, because if it's not there, you're really in trouble.
Right.
There was
right.
one day I forgot my phone, and Bill, if you remember, it was the best day of my life.
Yeah?
Because I called from work and said, I don't have my phone, so if I'm needed, I'm not going to know. You're going to call it, and you're going to hear it ringing in the bathroom where I left it.
Right.
But
in fairness to you, I'm now looking at the contents of your purse.
Hard to find things.
I can't. There's a lot of stuff in there.
I'll take a picture of it for our
Facebook
page.
From here, I can see the Donner Party from where I'm sitting right now. Just trying to find a way out.
You'd post a picture of the inside of your purse on your Facebook page?
Oh, sure. Remember last time I was cleaning it out, yep. And there was, like, I couldn't believe the stuff.
Yep.
There's a CCD homework assignment in here.
There's a CD burner. I don't know why you have that, but you do.
I got too much stuff.
Yep.
CCR album.
But you were like, shaky.
Can I tell you, you and Bertrand must not know what it's like to be a mom?
You always turn on us. Why do you do that?
We know what it's like to be moms.
Yeah,
all right,
we do.
First of all, Bill turned on me first. Second of all, I am the conduit for how my family runs. Not that I want to be.
I believe that.
So I need to be plugged in at all times.
Right.
Maybe you need to step back and let them flail a little bit on their own so they don't depend on you.
They'd appreciate you more.
Yeah.
Don't you think, Steve?
That's what I did.
A lot
more. God knows, I handled everything in my family until I just chucked it all one day.
That's funny. That's really funny.
Hey, no more peanut butter and jelly sandwiches from this man.
I'm done.
No more.
On the days I don't have my phone, I'm 1,000% happier.
You don't even use your phone.
I have it. I use it primarily to know what time it is.
It's just an accessory for you.
Right.
Can I tell you something about guys? And I hate to throw my husband under the bus, but whatever. Jim, I hope you're listening. We were going to Kevin's wedding, and Jim put his watch on. And I said, that watch looks great. Does it work? And he goes, I didn't even look at it. I just put it on as an accessory.
Oh.
Thankfully, the battery was up to date, but he hadn't worn it in so long. But he felt, I have a suit on, I'm dressed up, I'm going to put the watch on. Didn't even check to see if it was working.
Really?
That's what you use a phone for, just an accessory. So you look hip and cool to the kids.
That's the only reason. I don't know if people know this, but in Macy's downtown, there's a part downstairs. I can't remember if it's basement one or basement two. I want to say basement one. There's a watch shop that's actually a really good watch repair shop. I hope they're still there. I don't know if they're still there. I used to go there almost all the time. If anything was wrong with my watch at all, I would take it to Macy's, and it was done in a day or two. The prices were great, flawless service. You always had to wait a little while because there were 3 or 4 or 5 people in line in front of you, and there was a flurry of activity of other people getting their watches fixed that were paying for their watch. The last 2 times I was there, I was the only one there. So I don't even know if they're there anymore. It just shows you how a once burgeoning industry, the watch business, just isn't what it used to be. And it's because of cell phones, because now most people, with the press of a button, you go, okay, it's 10:12.
Exactly. Because I noticed your see-through watch that you're wearing.
Yeah.
It's invisible.
Yeah. I'm going to have a whole outfit made out of this material for your birthday.
Oh, God. Not for my birthday.
That's your birthday present.
Please.
Happy birthday.
Oh.
He's a giver.
Wow.
Yeah.
Best gift ever.
You're welcome.
For someone.
You're welcome.
Steve, do you have a watch on?
No.
See? Kevin, you have a watch on?
Not currently.
No?
It's the strangest thing because...
Kevin McDonough from sales, who's down
he
here, does
down
not have a watch
to say
on?
He does not wear a watch. Or a fire chief helmet. I don't know why he told me that, but he never wears a fire chief helmet, which is he's not a fireman.
All right, so four watches, for four.
Men who wear watches now wear them because they're into watches.
I think you're right.
It's jewelry for them.
I told you, Jim put it on. Not even he didn't even look to see if it was on time. He just dressed up and put it on, and that cracked me up.
But I don't know if there's a woman's equivalent of this, but for most guys worldwide, you put the watch on every day. You needed it because that's the way you told time. That was it. There was no questions asked. And now I know I have them at home somewhere in drawers and stuff, but I can't remember the last time I had one on.
I got to be honest with you. You'd look funny with a watch on.
Why?
You're not a jewelry guy. You don't wear your wedding band.
No, but Popeye would tell me what time it was all day long. Every day.
It's 3:06.
Thanks, Popeye.
Olive oil's the second hand. 1 second?
Right.
2 seconds?
And there was a time where I didn't spend a ton of money. I mean, the watch business is one. You can get a watch for $3. You can get a watch for $30,000.
It's amazing to me. I don't get it.
It's incredible, right? But every department store, I hope, still has a watch counter or two where you can look at the premium watches.
Well, you look at them. No one buys them.
They do.
Yeah, some people do.
There are a lot of men who are really into watches.
Yep.
Nobody here. And kids today?
We're
barely
men.
Oh, you're plenty man. The kids don't have watches. My 14-year-old would go through, he was much like you, Bill, where he'd want like some kind of character watch for a while,
right,
or some kind of spy watch.
Yeah.
He'd wear it for like a week and realize, I don't need a watch.
Yeah.
I got a phone.
Right.
So you're right. Because
it's
of the iPhone, no one wears a watch.
It's
I do
bad.
Every day.
Right.
And mine works.
That's a fashionable big honking watch.
This is a Michelle watch, which is way too much money, so I have to wear it every day to make good on it.
Oh.
What's a Michelle watch?
Just a brand with diamonds in it, and my husband bought it for me.
Did
so.
You do what I did, which is think that was a neighbor of Wendy's, and she just stole the watch
from it? Michelle's watch.
Give it back.
No, I stole
Give
it.
Give it back.
Michelle Obama has a fashion line already?
I'm surprised she doesn't.
Yes. All right, we'll take a quick
break.
What
time is it?
I don't know. I don't have a watch. How do I know? We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Yes, time is of the essence. I'm always late. Not late. Last minute.
Fashionably last minute.
But
yes.
Not usually late.
Not usually late, but you cut it to the wire many times.
Which is odd because I am the only one out of the four of us that wears a watch, so you'd think I'd know what time it was more than any of you guys.
You might think that, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, watches are obsolete, aren't they? Or are they not, Eric?
I don't think that they are. Bill, Wendy, hello. My wife has got literally 40 watches. None of them work. They're all fashion watches. You get them wet once and they're cashed. And they're all like flea market watches. I have three, and I keep telling her, I said, you know what? Just get three watches. You get your everyday Timex for when you're doing housework, yard work, whatever, that you don't care if you get dirt or water on it, whatever. I've got my middle grade Seiko, which is a nice enough watch. And then I have a 14-karat gold Mad Men era Longines dress.
Oh, Longines Whitnauer?
Longines
Whitnauer.
Is it really? Look at you.
Yeah,
Longines Whitnauer is a very good watch, and it's a Mad Men era watch that I inherited from my late father. It didn't work, and when he was alive, I found it in his jewelry box, and I figured, well, I'll take it to the jeweler, see if it's worth getting fixed. And they said, broken, it's worth $1,500.
Broken?
Broken,
wow.
Yeah. It was gold. And they said, it'll be about $50. All it needs is a cleaning and an adjustment and, you know, a new lens. So I had them fix it for $50, and then my dad said, well, you just keep it. And I don't think he realized how much it was worth. But
that's excellent.
Yeah, that's my favorite watch. But, I think men should wear watches and not refer to a cell phone all the time.
Right.
Or, you know, look at their computer to see what time it is.
It's a classier look, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, I had a nice band put on it, and if anything happens to it, I'll be heartbroken.
Yeah, I bet. Well, thanks for the phone call.
Okay.
All right. Can I just read this to you? 847 says, I was waiting for a flight out of Chicago just yesterday, and a young girl next to me asked what time it was because her phone was in a charger bar behind her. Mm-hmm. I looked at my wrist, and she said, whoa, I never had one of those.
What is that space age technology you have on your wrist? You know, after wearing one from the age of about, I don't know, 6 or 7 until somewhere in my 40s.
You were a 6-year-old wearing a watch?
Yeah, I had...
Did you have a pocket protector too?
No. I had
a briefcase?
There was a Mickey Mouse watch that I wanted. I got it in second grade. I got it for Christmas. And that was my watch for like 4 or 5 years. This real vintagey looking Disney, you know, from the 40s, yeah. Mickey Mouse watch.
It would look good on you now.
I would wear it now if I still had it. But you go through this weird transition when you stop wearing one, where if you do want to know what time it is, you just simply lift your wrist up and there's no watch there. And Terry used to make fun of me all the time. She goes, why don't you just write the time on your wrist so at least you have some kind of an answer for yourself.
Well, you know, a broken watch is right twice a day, which are better odds than the show.
Right. By far.
So that's good to know.
Yeah.
John has called us at 312-981-7200. Hello, John.
Hello, WGN friends.
What's going on, John?
I haven't worn a watch in years. You know, with a cell phone, you don't even really need one anymore. And so my wife, though, for Christmas, bought me this beautiful jeweled Boulevard watch. No numbers, just spots where the numbers are supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, my eyes are pretty bad up close. And for a long time, I was wearing it upside down.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But it looked good.
So one day, we were up skiing, and I went to what time it was. I didn't want to put my phone out, so I pulled my watch out, and it was exactly 12 hours off.
But see, it looked good on your wrist, so you didn't... I got to be honest with you. I have a date on my phone that says what date it is. I can't read it.
On your watch you have that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. It's way too small. Can you read? It's probably the wrong date, too.
No, it's way too small.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm glad they have it, I guess, but...
Yeah. I have no idea what that says.
I don't know.
That's hysterical, though. Thanks, John.
You bet. Talk to you guys later.
You know what always impressed me is you would see this in old movies, and I always thought when I was a kid I would grow into this, but I never did grow into it, is that thing that like they had in the 40s where guys would have vests, and then they'd reach inside their vest pocket and pull out a timepiece.
A pocket watch.
Yeah.
Like that's that always...
Yeah, that was such an impressive look. And when I was a kid, I went, I bet when I'm an adult, I could pull that off. But I've already passed adulthood, and that didn't happen.
You would look funny with a watch now or with...
with a timepiece, with my pajamas. We just have that ready.
Dylan bought one when the eighth graders go to Springfield every year, and he came home with a Land of Lincoln pocket watch.
Really?
He was very excited and cared for it and looked at it all the time for about 3 days.
Yeah, that's about...
And he's like, what am I going to do with this? Well, why'd you buy it?
I thought they were coming back. I was sure they were coming back.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Did you want to talk watches?
Yeah, I'm a millennial, 24 years old. I work every single day with a ton of other millennials and teenagers. Not a single one of us own a watch.
Isn't that crazy?
I've never owned a watch in my life.
Wow. See, a generation ago, nobody would have thought that possible, that you could go your lifetime without owning a watch, but it's reality.
Yeah.
Would you ever plan on getting one? Would there be a watch that you'd ever think to yourself, yeah, that won me over, I could get that and wear that, or not?
But the only reason I would ever wear a watch is for like a fashion accessory, but honestly, for teenagers and us millennials, I don't see watches as fashionable. Yeah.
What about an Apple Watch? Because I know that a lot of millennials want to be tied to their phone, and that ties you to your phone even more.
Yeah, I would do something like that, but not like the traditional sense of a watch, like one of those smart watches possibly, yeah.
All right, well, put that on your Christmas list. Christmas is the coming, Rachel.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
That's what Terry has. My wife has one that is, you know, it tells her how many steps she's walked every day. It gives her, you know, little bulletins about things. If there's a phone call coming or something, it lights up. So it's a watch, but it's, you know, it's a Jetsons watch. It does all kinds of futuristic things.
As the resident Bill and Wendy millennial, I would disagree with Rachel. I think they are fashionable, and I think there is still a place for them.
Do you have one, Kev?
I have three.
Well, why aren't you wearing one today?
I usually wear them for like when I want to dress up a little bit.
Wear all three.
All three of them?
That would look
one
cool.
of them, actually, I was going to say earlier, I'm probably guilty of wearing it when the battery was dead. I just wore it because I like the way it looks.
That's what Jim did going to your wedding, and it just cracked me up. It's like he gets the suit on, like all of a sudden he's dressed like an adult.
Right.
And then he goes to put his watch on.
Then I have that inner panicky dialogue of, oh no, what if somebody asks me what time it is? It's 3:45.
I don't know.
No, it's 8:30.
That just cracks me up. All right, well, I guess, you know, wear them if you got them, and if you don't, that's okay.
So true. Very, very true. All right, we will take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. Oh, today is the 40th anniversary of something huge. What is it? What happened 40 years ago today? We'll tell you that in just a little bit. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. We're easy to reach, you know, 312-981-7200. We'll be here till noon, and then from noon to 1 o'clock, we will be on the stream. 40 years ago today, this is a shock to me, that something took place, something in the world of show business, something in the world of entertainment, took place 40 years ago today. Wendy, you may know this because Kevin and I were kind of orchestrating what we were going to do here.
Yeah,
so
I think
may have
Kevin
overheard.
Blew it for me.
He might have. But let's go to Steve Bertrand.
Yes.
In the newsroom. Do you know what happened 40 years ago, Steve?
So that would be 77. What was the year?
Yep, 1977.
The Loop Radio Station was born.
It's not the Loop Radio Station, although their anniversary is also this week.
I think it was yesterday, 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that going to be your guess, Steve?
Didn't mean to steal it from you.
In my life, I've never guessed the Loop on anything.
No?
No, wouldn't have been it.
All right.
This is entertainment?
It's in the world of entertainment.
Oh, Andy Gibb died.
Nope, it is not Andy Gibb.
Why would you say that?
It's not Andy Gibb.
It's as close as anything else. Can you give me a hint?
It was on TV. It took place on television.
Entertainment, 1977.
And it'll throw you that the... I had to check two different websites because I heard this the other day and I went, well, that's inaccurate. That wasn't 40
fake
years
news.
Ago. Yeah, I thought it was fake news, Wendy. But something happened March 15th, 1977 that became a pretty big deal. Nobody knew at the time, but it became a pretty big deal.
Nightline?
No, not Nightline.
Isn't it funny how
it would be around there, though.
Yeah.
Nightline was just a little after that.
It would have been 79, yeah.
And Nightline came about because of the Iran hostage crisis.
Correct.
They thought it was just going to be for a couple of days or weeks, and then Nightline ran forever.
Who would have thought we wanted news, in-depth news,
right.
Not just headlines.
Every night, yeah. Hmm.
All right, I know what it is now. I would have liked to have guessed, but Kevin blew it for me.
Give me one more, Bill.
It's from the world of comedy. It's a television show, and it's a comedy, and it premiered 40 years ago today.
Featuring...
Bill Cosby?
Nope, not Bill Cosby.
I have no clue then.
Featuring one of my favorite actors of all time, the young one.
Yep, who is sadly
no longer with us.
Yeah. Yep.
Honestly, one of the best actors, and I was so upset when he died suddenly.
Yep.
There's another clue.
Young actor died suddenly. Sitcom?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was so underrated.
Wasn't he?
Honest to God.
All right. I will let the cat out of the bag.
Not Sanford and Son.
It's not Sanford and Son. No. 40 years ago today, on the night of March 15th, 1977, the very first episode of Three's Company appeared.
Come and knock on my door, Bill.
Never in a million years.
What's the line after that?
I'll be waiting for you.
I'll be waiting for you, right. I couldn't think of it.
Come and knock on our door.
Been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
Waiting for you. So this was...
So you're saying Norman Fell died too soon?
Well, first of all, yes, he did. Second of all, John Ritter is probably one of the most underrated comedic talents of all time, isn't he?
I totally 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
And he had some... heart ailment that he was unaware of and just had a heart attack. And I know I was older. This was, I don't remember when he died, but I remember thinking, what do you mean he had a heart attack and he died? Why couldn't you save him?
Yeah.
I remember thinking that.
Yeah, I know. He was doing Eight Simple Rules, his follow-up sitcom. And
collapsed on the set, didn't
he? So sad.
And it's like, okay, he died.
So sad. Well,
why couldn't you fix him?
Right, right.
I remember thinking that.
Yep. Now, I have found a bunch of facts. First of all, it's almost inconceivable that that could possibly have been 40 years ago. All I remember is, in one of my classes, I was a sophomore in high school when it premiered, and they did a survey, not just about television, but the teacher, it was a media class, and he wanted to know what our favorite rock band was, and our favorite all-time movie was, and our favorite novel was, and our favorite TV show was. So everybody was so divided on everything. What's your favorite food? There were 35 different answers. What's your favorite? If you could go any place in the world, where would you go? There were 35 different answers. What's your favorite television show? Half the class, the answer was Three's Company.
What a cool class that was.
Yeah.
But it was a terrible show.
It, in retrospect, if you go back and watch an episode, there's a nostalgia factor that you will enjoy. But in the same token, it was not high art.
Worst acting ever.
It was all maybe just because it was the bawdiest show of the moment.
That's
right?
What it was. I think that's it.
Because really, the acting was horrendous. I'm sorry. Chrissy Snow, Joyce DeWitt was over the top. John Ritter was Jack Ritter.
It was
Jack
John,
Tripper.
John Ritter played Jack Tripper, right.
I mean, he was totally off the charts.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. The premise is all based, of course, on a series of misunderstandings, right? Everything about the show, every episode was somebody thought they saw or did something that they didn't actually really see or think. You know, that's every episode.
Well, and that's the premise of the show, right? That back then, the idea of a guy living with two girls would have been forbidden by the landlord, but they thought he was gay.
Oh, yeah, that was it. That was the myth they perpetrated, right?
Was that the first, like, gay mention on TV?
No, Soap. No.
Well, Soap, I guess, was the first one with Billy Crystal, right?
Well, you know what's funny is every show had
a character.
The Liberace
Christmas specials.
He wasn't gay.
Every show had a character that was, by 60s standards, silly. You know, Uncle Arthur on Bewitched was silly.
All right, good point.
Right? Charles Nelson Reilly on The Ghost of Mrs. Muir was silly. They just wouldn't cop to the fact that those characters were gay. They would just make them over the top silly, you know? But then at some point, that changed, thankfully.
I never thought of it.
I didn't either. Arthur, oh my God.
You know, like that was their way of handling it back then. It's so crazy to believe it, but it's true, you know?
Steve,
some calls.
Steve wanted to jump in. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Fine. Just a little clarification. He didn't die of a heart attack. He died of what they call an aortic aneurysm.
That's right.
So what is that exactly?
It is. I can speak to it fluently because I had one, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yes. You have about 15 to 20 minutes to make it to the hospital. 50% of the people make it, and only about 20% of those people who make it to the hospital survive. That is when your aorta, it blows up like a balloon inside. Some people have no symptoms. I did not. He obviously did not either. And once it explodes, that's it. That's your major artery to everything.
Now, a brain aneurysm, much the same thing. Yeah.
In your brain and not as serious, okay? They're
right.
All serious, but certainly this one, You've got minutes.
Yeah.
You've got minutes to make it to the hospital.
Where were you, Steve, when it happened to you?
Very interestingly enough, thank God, this woman saved my life, my doctor. I was on my business trip. I was about to be gone for about 45 days out of the country. Decided to get a physical, and I went to see this this woman, and she started feeling around my abdomen at the end of the exam. And she said she didn't like the way this felt. And she said, I'm not a cardiologist or whatever, but I'm going to call the hospital. You go there and get x-rays. You won't have to wait in line. I'll tell them that you need to go right in, wait for the results, bring them back. Well, I did that. She said, yes. Again, I'm not a cardiologist, but I know how to read this. You have an aneurysm, and it's serious. 2 days later, I was in Northwestern being operated on.
Wow. She did save your life.
Yes, she did.
Wow.
Yes, she did.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, and we are so thankful you're here to tell the story, Steve. But there was, they originally thought it was a heart attack, and he was taken to a hospital, and they found out he had aortic dissection. It can be fatal if the artery ruptures, but they never ordered a chest x-ray. And had they done that, now the family's saying that he could have gone into surgery and been saved.
God. Terrible.
I'm going to speculate here just for a moment. Based upon what you just said, I'm going to say that he probably was already dead.
Wow.
Okay. Ugh. Yeah, because that having time to do a chest x-ray, if it burst, he's pretty much, that's it. He's got to go right to the operating room. No chest x-rays. No chest x-ray is going to necessarily pick that up once it erupts. Well, it will, but it's too late. It's too late.
I remember Katie Sagal played his wife on this show, Eight Simple Rules, and I remember her saying afterwards that he came in and he looked all white and he seemed out of sorts, and they knew something was wrong that morning but couldn't quite figure out.
He had sudden nausea and vomiting, according to documents, during on the set of Eight Simple Rules. He felt faint and had chest pain. At 6 p.m., he went to a nearby hospital. An emergency room doctor ordered tests, including a chest X-ray, and prescribed aspirin and anti-nausea medicine, according to records. And the hospital did not listen to the ER doctor to get him a chest X-ray. So it does sound like he did have time, Steve.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that part of the story. I thought he just dropped on the set, and that was the first inclination that he had that he even had a problem. Did not know the other part.
Yeah, they brought him in.
Just did mention. Yeah.
Steve,
that sounds like neglect to me.
We're so glad that your story has a happy ending. That really could have been awful. So good for you.
And I was in my 40s then.
Oh God. Way too young for something like that to happen.
See, now I have to go get X-rays of everything.
Because
you know, seriously, you don't know what's in you, ready to blow up.
Well, like I said, he had some symptoms, and they should have never released them.
So true.
But yeah, I did not. But mine was caught before anything occurred.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Yep. Have a good day, Steve.
He's going to. He's alive.
He's still alive. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then some things about the show, Three's Company, celebrating its 40th anniversary that you don't know. Some surprises that I didn't. A couple of these, I'm shocked
you didn't
by.
Know?
I didn't know these.
Then we didn't know.
Nobody knew these. All right, stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, it's hard to believe, but 40 years ago tonight, Three's Company premiered on ABC and changed the world. Now, this song that you're hearing, that's the theme song from Three's Company, was written by a man named Joe Raposo. Joe wrote two other well-known TV themes. Would you possibly know them?
I don't know what it is.
Joe Raposo, in addition to writing the theme for Three's Company, also wrote the themes for Sesame Street and The Electric Company.
Get out of here.
I can't. I'm contracted
Seriously?
To stay. Yeah, he did.
Won't you tell me how to get...
Same guy.
The Electric Company.
Yeah. They're kind of, I mean, they're kind of similar.
Not really.
They're kind, a little kind of, sort of. In the beginning credits, you know, the very beginning during that theme song, you get to meet the three main characters, and they're all doing wacky stuff. And John Ritter is riding his bike down a trail at the beach, and he sees a woman with dark hair who he thinks is attractive, and he keeps looking at her, and that makes him fall off his bicycle. Do you know who that woman is with dark hair?
Cher.
She's famous. It is not Cher. It wasn't Cher, Wendy, because Cher was on her farewell tour at the time. It could not be available
one of her
for
many.
Filming.
Yeah.
Monica Lewinsky?
It is not Monica Lewinsky, who would have been, I think, an infant at the time.
Is it Courtney Cox, who was also surprising us in the Bruce Springsteen video, Dancing in the Dark?
No.
Can you give us a hint?
Yes, it's Suzanne Somers.
With a wig?
Yeah.
Incognito?
Yeah. No, in California.
Isn't that a city in California?
Cognito, California. That's where they film it.
You are so quick.
All right. So how about this? One of the original choices to play Jack Tripper, he did not get the role, but he was heavily favored to get the role, was a young actor named Billy Crystal. He did not get it.
He would have been good, but there's no one could have taken Jack Tripper's role to the top like John Ritter did.
Well, at the time, John Ritter was known primarily for The Waltons. He had a kind of a reoccurring character on The Waltons. He did other episodic television. For instance, he's the guy in the classic episode of Mary Tyler Moore that marries Ted and Georgette at Mary's apartment. They make a quick phone call because they can't get anyone to marry them. And he's a tennis guy. He's also a reverend, and he comes and marries them in his tennis outfit.
Why don't you do that? You like to play tennis so much, you can also marry people.
Yeah, I would do. I'd be happy to do that.
That's why you remember that, because you love tennis.
Well, yeah, I guess
no,
it's probably
he's a TV savant.
I know why. It's both reasons. I do remember that scene though.
It's a really funny episode, and I think if you watch him in that episode. He's doing kind of an early version of Jack Tripper.
Yep.
He really is.
Although The Waltons, I don't remember. What did he do on The Waltons?
You know, I can't remember because I haven't seen an episode of The Waltons in years and years and years. But I know he had a reoccurring character.
Like a neighbor?
He might have been, No, I think he may have been the pastor on Walton Mountain.
That feels right to me.
Does that sound right?
I'm picturing him in a pastor's...
I'm almost positive he was the young pastor on Walton Mountain, Walton's Mountain.
You didn't bring up Sling Blade yet, right?
He was, well, later on, yeah, after Three's Company, he was great in Sling Blade. And also,
MASH and Hawaii Five-0.
Right.
Did Reverend Matthew Fordwick.
That's it.
Bill.
What was he in MASH?
Only on one or two episodes. Well, I think one episode.
I got to find it.
Also, I know this is really obscure, but this is his first movie ever. And you and I interviewed him once, and we talked about this movie at great length. There's a very scary movie in the early 70s called The Other, and he's in The Other.
That, honest to God, is one of the scariest movies
so good.
Ever.
Yeah, two twin brothers, the Undervaki twins.
The who?
The Undervakis.
Of course you know that. Was this before you had your twins? Was this a foreshadowing?
Yes. The reason my wife and I wanted twins was so they could emulate Niles and Holland in The Other.
What are their last names?
Undervaki. Christopher and Martin Undervaki.
Character names are real.
Those are their real names.
Is there an imblot involved in there? Did you know how to spell it?
There's.
You are sick.
I don't know how to spell it,
Mister. You're sick.
Oh my God!
But yeah, he's in that movie, The Other. If you've ever seen it, you know it's one of the creepiest movies of all time. He's not that creepy in it. He's one of the normal people in that movie. But boy, is he good in that. Up for the role of Chrissy Snow, the role that Suzanne
Farrah
Summers
Fawcett.
Played. No, but you're. It's in that ballpark.
Cheryl Ladd.
Nope. Lonnie Anderson.
Ugh.
We would
that would have been perfect. That would have been perfect.
It would have been perfect.
Yeah, but we got enough of her and WKRP.
You didn't like Lonnie Anderson?
I did. She played a role well in that she was the blonde bombshell.
Right.
But
right.
Bailey was so... her
she
character was more in-depth.
Right. Well, I don't see... Obviously, I don't know what she could do, but the Suzanne Summers thing was very active. It was
yes.
a very active role.
A lot of bounces. There was a lot of bouncing.
You guys, again, are just disgusting.
Also up for the role?
Well, no, I really meant that. It was a physical comedy show.
Right.
Right, but he's saying bouncing because she was very busty.
Well, even at the beginning, think about the opening credits. The first time you see Suzanne Summers, it's because somebody's watering the flowers and they get her wet and she turns around and it's just nothing but cleavage. It's just like, it seems like a minute and a half. It's only like 3 seconds, but that's what the role called for. So Suzanne Summers got it. Lonnie Anderson was up for it. And also up for the role, this is weird, Dame Judi Dench. Did you know that? That would have been cool.
Damn Judi Dench.
No, Dame Judi Dench, not Damn Judi Dench.
I thought it was a British spelling.
All right, we must take a break. We are forced to take a break.
And we have some time to finish this if you want,
oh,
because
yeah,
our guest isn't until 11:15.
Oh, let's do that. All right, more things you did not know about Three's Company. Today's the 40th anniversary of the first episode. News first, then that, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Three's Company premiered 40 years ago today. It's hard to imagine, but 40 years ago is the first time we got to meet Jack Tripper and Chrissy and Janet and the Ropers.
Chrissy Snow, Janet, what was her last name? How can I
don't remember.
You don't remember something?
I do not remember. I wish I did, but I do not. That song you just heard was not from Three's Company. It was from the British version that preceded Three's Company called Man About the House. They patterned that show after Man About the House. It was very fashionable in the 70s. Most of your favorite sitcoms, All in the Family, Sanford and Son, all hard to believe, but our best shows all kind of emanated from Britain, and we just did American versions of them.
And Ian, you wanted to mention that, correct?
Well, yeah, you just stole me thunder there.
Sorry.
I thought I was doing some breaking news for you there, but no, obviously not.
What do you know about this? And by the way, that's a... Oh, go on.
No. I mean, I grew up with it in the early 70s. I don't know what actual year it started, but I mean, when I came over here, like in the 80s,
yeah,
and then I saw Three's Company, it just sent me back to that. That was all. It just sprung a memory on me when I was driving here.
Now, Ian, let's see. I'll name the other American shows. Tell me the British equivalent. Sanford and Son in Great Britain is what?
Steptoe and Son.
Steptoe and Son. All in the Family in Great Britain is what?
I've got it.
I'll help you out. Till
Death Us Do Part.
Yep, that's it.
Are you guys going to meet for a lunch date? Because I think you'd get along quite
well.
We're
going to Arthur Treacher's.
Bangers and Mash.
Yeah.
I've only seen one Art of Treacher's, my friend. I was in Des Plaines.
Oh, that's the place to be.
Ian, thank you so much for calling. Call anytime. We like listening to your beautiful accent.
Thanks, Ian.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
You're stealing my thunder.
That was legit. There were two spinoffs from Three's Company. Can you name them?
The Ropers.
The Ropers was one. They gave Norman Fell and Audra Lindley their own show. I can get all sad when I think about it.
You were totally choked up.
Norman Fell did die too soon, Wendy. Steve was right. They gave them their own show for a little while. And Norman Fell had it in his contract that if the Ropers didn't do well, which it didn't, it only lasted, I think, a year and a half, he would be allowed to come back to Three's Company. But by that time, they had Mr. Furley, played by Don Knotts, and they just gave him a payout and said, no, thanks, but no thanks. We already have a guy.
With his silk shirts, they were fantastic, Mr. Furley.
A lot of scarves.
Oh, that's right. That's where Maud got her idea.
Yep.
I don't know the other spinoff.
The other one was a show that only lasted less than a year called Three's a Crowd.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and that was John Ritter meeting a girl and then moving in with her. And then Robert Mandan from Soap played her father. And there was hilarity ensuing.
Was there a Lander sister involved in that? In Three's a Crowd?
There were no Lander sisters.
Okay. Where are they now?
I don't know. That's a very good question. What anniversary is it for them? Heather Locklear, it says here, was one of the actresses that they auditioned to play the replacement for Suzanne Somers. Now, they went with Jenna Lee Harrison.
Yeah, I didn't like her that much.
No, she was not good. And I don't know if you'll remember this. This is one of my highlights from my radio career. I don't know if you'll remember this. When you and I were at The Loop, we interviewed Jenna Lee Harrison on the phone for something else. She was selling some product, and we had her on to talk about the product. And then when the interview was over, I said to her, hey, afterwards, Wendy and I are going to the Regal Beagle. Why don't you meet us for a drink? And do you remember her response to that?
She was unaware of what that was.
She had no idea what that was, even though the Regal Beagle was mentioned in every episode of Three's Company. That was the bar that they hung out in.
She had no idea.
She didn't.
I do remember that.
I'd love to meet you guys there. Where is it? But she didn't know that it was fictitious.
And I hate to admit what I'm going to say, but the reason Jenny Lee Harrison did not fare well in my book is she was a bad actress, but she wasn't over the top enough.
You're right.
And it didn't work.
She played it on a different level.
Yeah.
Right. She was a cheerleader for, I can't remember which NFL team, but they found her. She was like an LA Raiders cheerleader or something.
And where is she now?
I don't know where she is now either.
And Janet Wood was Joyce DeWitt's
character. That's very good. Very, very good. Time for one more really quickly. The reason Suzanne Somers left the show, I don't know if you remember this, but at some point in the peak of the show's popularity, they didn't take her off all the way. They said she was on a trip, and every episode would end with a phone call between Chrissy and Jack and Janet, which was really lame.
It was lame.
Awful. The reason she left the show was she demanded a pay increase. She was getting $30,000 per episode at the time. This is 1977
money. Which was probably good then.
Decent money. But she wanted to make $150,000 per episode because that's what John Ritter was making. And she said, if he's making that, I'm also going to make that.
Hey, I'm all for equal pay.
Yeah.
But equal pay for equal talent. Sorry.
Right. I know.
She's no John Ritter.
She's no John Ritter, but
her thighs look better.
She really did bring in your horny teenage crowd. You know, if you were a teenage guy looking for a show and you all of a sudden Suzanne Somers was on your screen, you weren't going to change it. You were going to go, I'll watch this. I'll see what this is all about.
That is so lame that they did the phone call. I remember that.
Remember how stupid that was every week? That's how the episode would end every week.
I do remember
that. It was terrible. It was awful. All right, so there you have it. It's been 40 years since the very first episode of Three's Company. Look at how we've all evolved over the years. Hard to imagine, but we have. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but original thought seems to be disappearing.
No, don't say that. Is that true?
Well, what I mean is, especially with Facebook and Twitter, social media, a lot of times someone will say something and then you think according to that group.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times if you make an opinion on something and mm-hmm. someone disagrees with it, a big fight will start. So sometimes it's easier to just agree with everyone. And there are these two guys that are They're in the field of leading minds. Cognitive scientists Stephen Sloman and Philip Fernbach. They argue that we survive and thrive despite our mental shortcomings. They're saying that we know things happen, but we don't exactly know why. And they have written a book called The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. And when we get them on the line, we're going to talk about like fake news. We talked about this earlier and why political opinions and false beliefs are so hard to change. We always say when you go to a family gathering, you don't want to talk religion or politics because you're never really going to change someone else's mind and you're going to get into a big fat fight. So on the line with us right now, Dr. Stephen Sloman, Dr. Philip Fernbach, and the book is called The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi. Great to be here.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Do you, now I, in your introduction, and I could be wrong on this, a lot of times it's easier to just think as a group because if you have your own independent thought, a fight is going to ensue. Any truth to that?
Absolutely. That's fundamentally true. In fact, I think often when we express ourselves, really what we're expressing is the view of our community. People rarely come to their beliefs through a rational process of thought. Rather, they just hold on to the beliefs that the community that they are part of tell them to hold, and that's what they express.
Guys, did you ever think you'd see anything like what's going on right now? The nation seems to be so divided. It's such a civil war of ideas and opinions right now. I don't remember ever seeing this in my lifetime. Do you?
It does seem to be a particularly extreme time. Polarization has been increasing dramatically over time. But the argument in our book is that really this is an outgrowth, not of something that's changed in people, but it's an outgrowth of something that's very endemic to the way that the mind works, which is the idea that really we do not, as individuals, have a lot of detailed information in our own heads. What we're really great at is forming communities where knowledge is distributed across the community. Every person knows a little bit, and together the community knows a lot and can accomplish a lot. And so that aspect of the way the mind works really gives rise to the fact that you can get such extreme opinions on either side where the individuals themselves don't know that much about the issues.
Can I ask you a question that will either be the smartest or the dumbest question that anyone's ever asked you?
This, I can assure you it won't be the dumbest.
All right. Well, wait until you hear me out. This is what it reminds me of, having read a little bit of what you guys have written. It reminds me of the Borg in Star Trek The Next Generation, where they all thought collectively. Nobody was allowed to think individually. It was as a group. Do you see a similarity there? Do you know what I mean by that?
I'm not enough of a Star Trek fan to comment on that. Phil?
Oh, well, I'm a bit of a Trekkie. Trekker, I guess is the proper term. No, yeah, so that's a very interesting idea. And that's sort of taking really what's true about the way thought works to a very, very extreme state. We sometimes talk about our ideas as being like a hive mind, where if you think about a beehive, the behavior of the hive is extremely complex. But no individual in the hive has any idea what the hive is doing. So the complexity really emerges from each little piece of the hive doing its own little bit. And the Borg is kind of like a hive mind in that same way. And humankind is a little bit like a hive mind in the sense that we all do our own little bit. And what can emerge from that is extremely complex undertakings like building spaceships and so on. So there is a similarity there. Now, it's obviously that's a TV show and we're not as extreme on that dimension, but it is an interesting insight into the way the mind works for sure.
What I noticed a lot on Facebook when President Donald Trump took over, if you like him and you voted for him, that's awesome. If you don't, that's awesome too. But a lot of people are sharing stories without doing any research. It's like some story, somebody who will love Donald Trump will post this on their Facebook page and they don't even check the source. It could come from like a place called mybrothersblog.com. And it's like no one checks to make sure this is accurate. If you're for Donald Trump, you're like, okay, well, look, this is what I believe, so I'm just going to share this news, when in essence, it's not real news.
Yeah, you know, I suspect that people have always been like that. And what's different today is the ease with which that information can be passed around to others, right? I mean, the internet has just completely changed the dynamic. now we don't have a common source of wisdom like Walter Cronkite, who's telling us, you know, what the facts are. We rely on our internet bubbles, and those bubbles are so much stronger than they used to be because we're able to reach out around the globe to create them. And not only that, but most of the major sources of information on the web individualize that information. So we only get the stuff that the Facebook or Google thinks we want to see. And what do we want to see? Well, we want to see the stuff that reinforces our opinions, the stuff that's consistent with what we believe.
Right.
And we only believe that because our community believes it.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Sloman and Dr. Philip Fernbach, both of them cognitive scientists and authors of The Knowledge Illusion. Where exactly is the illusion?
The illusion is in our sense that we understand things better than in fact we do. So this has been shown in the experimental laboratory. All you have to do is ask people how well they understand a simple object like a ballpoint pen, and then ask them how it actually works. And what the person will discover most of the time, unless they happen to be a ballpoint pen expert, is that they just don't know how it works. And there's no reason they should. They're actually much more complicated than they seem.
So we're fooling ourselves, right? Is it true? Is it fair to say we're kidding ourselves for the most part?
Oh, absolutely.
We are.
That's the illusion.
All right. How do we learn to think on our own? How do we learn to not fool ourselves anymore?
Well, that's two different questions. The answer to the first one is that we definitely do not think we should try to learn to think alone. The human mind is really what it's made for is thinking together. That's why, Why We Never Think Alone is the subtitle of the book. It's really the critical thing to achieving great things. How can we get out of the illusion? That's a different question. And in fact, I think it is pretty useful some of the time to not live in the illusion. Maybe sometimes living in the illusion is useful, but often having a little more humility about what we actually understand can actually be quite productive. And how do we do that? Well, we try to check our understanding, which we do all too rarely. You know, when you see that post on Facebook that's consistent with what you already believe, do you just accept it, or do you actually say to yourself, wait a second, do I really understand this issue in as much depth as I might initially think? Because that's what our brains tell us at first blush. So sometimes you have to go deeper.
The other important thing is we have to be able to identify expertise, right? Because we do have to rely on other people.
Sure.
The world's too complicated.
And what I would like if people put on their Facebook page is here's why I like this candidate. It affects me in this particular way. Because you can't argue with, you know, the feeling of like when Ronald Reagan was president, a lot of people loved him. My father had passed away and he removed a lot of the Social Security that my mom got. So it was like, I don't like what he did. That was a personal experience. So I almost feel if you speak from the heart, someone could understand you better and have a great conversation instead of just saying your guy's stupid.
That's really interesting. That may well be true. What we have found in our research is the best way to get other people to listen to you is instead of talking about how you feel and what your values are, talk about the issue. Talk about the consequences of a particular policy, right? Like, what is going to happen if we repeal Obamacare? Not how you feel about Obamacare, not whether you think it's, universal health coverage is the most important thing, but what is actually going to happen in the world if we repeal Obamacare? And that's something hopefully most people can at least talk about together, even if they don't agree on the final outcome.
I don't know. You're using logic, and I think that's a bad thing, that logic.
You think logic's a bad thing?
Terrible, yeah. Who needs logic? Is this, would you say this condition is inherent globally, or is this just something that happens more here in the U.S.? This is everywhere, isn't it?
I certainly think that this is a human problem. It's not a Republican or a Democrat thing. It's not a America or Europe thing. I think it's a human thing.
I just think people have lost their politeness factor, because I know that there were two family members that were fighting about our current president, and one left, called the other one a bad name, and walked out of the house. And it's like, why can't you just say, you know what, I see your point, I don't agree with it, hey, let's go have a beer. But it's like no one can stop. It seems like everyone has to get the last word in, and that's why everything's exploding.
Yeah. I would also hazard that that's not something that's new. We might remember the good old days fondly, but I don't think that human beings have changed that much. So
we've always been like this.
In the Vietnam era, for instance, we saw a lot of that. You know, I think a lot of that is that people feel the need to defend their community, right? The feelings they have about politics are feelings that come from their community. And when people violate their beliefs, they feel like they have to come to the defense of the people that that they associate with. And that's why it becomes so emotional.
Gentlemen, thanks for spending time with us. Again, it's Dr. Stephen Sloman and Dr. Philip Fernbach. The book is called The Knowledge Illusion, Why We Never Think Alone, and it is available wherever books are sold, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Amazon.com is a great place to look.
Perfect.
Or your local bookstore.
Thanks, guys.
Really
appreciate
fascinating.
It.
Thank you so much.
All right, a quick break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thanks so much. It's Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder, and every other week we are joined by our friend Dane Neal, who has some exciting news for you Dane Neal fans out there. Dane, first of all, thank you for being here. Great to see you.
For all those kids that are jotting down every word I say
right
at home with the...
It's going to pay off today.
The Dane Dakota ring.
Today, right. Eat more Ovaltine. What?
Oh, my gosh.
You have brought with you a very, very special guest.
You know, we try to have special guests on a regular basis. Sometimes we fall a little bit short. Oftentimes we exceed your expectations on the word special. And here we have somebody that's special for a number of different reasons. It's the world of coffee. People love... I want to say everyone loves coffee, but I know, Bill, that you're one of those, you're like, you know.
I'm not a fan of it, but I appreciate the art form that coffee has become.
Right. Bill recognizes that it's a big thing out there.
It's becoming quite a hit.
For other people.
The coffee.
You can get somebody that's doing things in their industry at the highest level, and then if you can have a higher purpose attached to it, and then if that higher purpose is part of the entire operation.
Yeah.
You know what you have?
Success.
Ideally, right? Yep. And you've got Pete Leonard from I Have a Bean. He is here.
Howdy. I Have a Bean.
I Have a Bean.
One of the greatest names ever in
you.
Business history.
That's what we thought.
Was this your idea, Pete? I Have a Bean?
The name was not my idea.
No?
No, because the company is actually Second Chance Coffee Company.
Oh.
But try and sell coffee as Second Chance Coffee.
Right.
That doesn't work.
Sounds like somebody took a sip, wasn't thrilled, and gave
exactly.
it to you.
Oh, we all know what happened with Doggy Bag Burgers. They never
right.
thought, all right.
right. right.
And why not?
I don't know. What. No
they
one
were
knows
way
why.
Cheaper.
Right. It was just the idea that maybe these had been enjoyed
There's
previously.
There's a bite taken out of my burger.
Exactly
just eat
right.
it.
So
just
it was secondhand coffee, people called it. Second Chance, what? Because it wasn't good enough the first time.
No,
it had to be
that doesn't work.
Again.
Second banana work.
No.
coffee.
Second
that,
fiddle.
You did the right thing.
Yeah.
So how long has the company been up and running?
So we founded in 07. Mm-hmm. We realized we needed to design and invent our own coffee roasting machine. It took 2 years to do that. We started roasting in June of 2009
wow.
on a commercial basis.
So what went into that, just the building of your own machine? That must have been in and of itself an impossible...
Insanity
yeah.
went into it. A yeah. lot of computer programming, a lot of help from a lot of friends of mine that know a whole lot more about programming and welding and stainless steel and airflow dynamics and all that kind of stuff.
When you're going to create your own machine, you like to stay away from people using the word contraption to describe it, right?
Sure.
So this is
however.
However.
But it is a contraption.
But so it's one thing to decide that you like coffee, you're a fan of coffee, you enjoy drinking it. It's another to decide, hey, I think that this is a business I want to get into. And then I guess, right, you have to find those moving parts to make it possible. Were you always a big coffee fan and this is the way that you could, get high on your own supply?
That's a great question, Dane. I've actually loved coffee from the very first cup I had.
How old were you?
I was 12.
Really?
Yeah. I was in the basement of a church, and my mom was drinking a cup of coffee out of a styrofoam cup, those little 8-ounce cups.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, can I have some of that? And she had this look on her face like, yeah, sure, kid. Okay, go ahead,
right.
Pete, have some coffee. So it was mostly cream and sugar, I got to say. But I took a sip and was like, hey, that's... pretty good.
Which is weird for a 12-year-old kid, even with tons of cream and sugar in it.
I was weird, so.
Because my kids do that, hey, can I try it? Go ahead. And they're like, ew, so bitter. Right. But it is an acquired taste, except for you.
Except for me. Well, there was a lot of sugar in there. Yeah. But that's what started my love affair with coffee. So since I was 12, I've liked coffee. Jeez. Now, my mother didn't let me drink it when I was 12, after the first five sips of that cup. Mm-hmm. So it was a number of years later.
You're switching to whiskey, said Mom. We can't have a 12-year-old drinking coffee.
I said, how about bourbon?
Right. Good move. Good move. What do you make of, in your lifetime, what coffee has become? There was a time where you'd go to a diner and get a glass for 15 cents, and now it's become what it's become.
Yeah, right. So we're in what's called the third wave for coffee, right? Just the thing you're talking about is the first wave.
Yeah.
And that was going someplace to a diner and getting, well, diner coffee. And it was okay, I guess, for what we had back then. And then Starbucks came along. And that was the beginning of really what's called specialty coffee, well known in the U.S. That's second wave.
Yeah.
Third wave, go to Wicker Park, go to our cafe in the library at in the Wheaton Public Library. You're getting latte art. You're getting coffee that's not roasted, ultra dark, burnt, oily stuff.
It's Starbucks too strong for me. Got to be honest.
It's too dark. It's over roasted is what a lot of people think, but they've done a great job.
And, yeah,
frankly,
because they put whipped cream on some of the stuff.
They do.
They've got a store right here downtown, Pete. There's one in the city now.
What? There
is?
There's
a Starbucks.
Are you kidding?
Passed it the other day.
Is it across the street from the other one?
I don't know where it is. It's inside the other one.
But you're right, where they're trying to find ways to take people that maybe wouldn't be fans of traditional just regular coffee or over-roasted coffee and make it kind of something palatable for everybody, whether it's got that caramel drizzle on it. I mean, where you have those things, where it is more of kind of a dessert beverage, really.
Yeah, and a very high caloric one.
Yeah, there's that, isn't there?
Wendy, you drink coffee, right?
I have to have coffee at least 2 to 4 cups every morning just to get me going. And I didn't have any the other day, and I wondered why I had such a horrific headache.
Yeah,
fantastic. As soon as I had a cup of coffee, done.
Perfect. Well, I've just brewed using an AeroPress. I brought some coffee that we roasted today.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the island of Java, which is in the country of Indonesia. And I just brewed some in an AeroPress. I have a third of a cup of coffee right here for you.
I
have a bean mug. It's perfect for drinking. However, there is no cream or sugar.
Is that okay, Wendy? I know you usually like both cream and sugar.
Smell it first.
I will.
But you, Pete, refuse. It's much like people who say, what are you putting ketchup on steak for? You don't want cream and sugar in your product. You think it?
I personally don't want cream and sugar in there because, frankly, part of my job at the company is tasting the coffee,
sure,
not tasting the cream and the sugar.
Are you offended if somebody does add it?
I used to be.
But not anymore?
No.
Okay.
People get to drink it the way that they want it.
Can I just tell you that typically I drink coffee to get me going in the morning. I like the smell of it more than the taste, usually.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's because I haven't had good coffee.
Maybe. I don't know what you're drinking. Probably shouldn't say it on the air, but
it varies.
Yeah.
Just whatever's on
whatever's
sale.
Whatever's close. Oh, I see. So
we
you're
make
brewing
it at
home.
Yeah.
You and 85% of the U.S.
Is that true? Is that about the number?
85% of the coffee consumed in the U.S. is brewed at home. Only 15% is purchased outside of the house. So that includes Starbucks and what used to be Caribou, which is now Pete's.
Yeah.
All of that external coffee, that's only 15%.
Those people who have the high-end machines in their home, those are becoming more and more common. Are you a fan of those, or are those not doing it for you?
Well, it depends on what you mean by high-end.
I think they're all the same, but I got maybe a crappy one.
Do they vary dramatically?
They do. The most popular one is with the K-cups,
yeah,
right.
Krups, not craps, Wendy. It's Krups.
Oh, yeah.
You're saying it wrong.
Well, Krups is a brand of a
right.
coffee brewer, right?
Yeah.
And it's not a K-cup machine or a Keurig machine.
Oh.
Those typically will. There's only 5 grams of coffee in a typical K-cup.
Yeah.
Which isn't anywhere close to enough to brew an 8 or 10 or 12 ounce cup of coffee.
Really?
Not even close.
Oh.
So you need about 13 grams to get an 8-ounce cup of coffee, which we make K-cups as well.
They neglect to tell you that on the box, don't they?
They
forget to leave that in.
It just doesn't say inadequate on the side.
Right. Inadequate. Sorry, you're going to need 4 of these.
I got to tell you about my experience right now with black coffee, which I've had before. And quite honestly, I use like a mixture of creamer, a sweetened creamer.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the consistency where it's a little bit thicker. So this obviously more watery in consistency, but not in flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It's tasty, and it is not leaving a very bitter aftertaste in my mouth. It's very smooth.
Smooth and sweet, and that's really because of our roasting machine and the quality of coffee beans that we choose to roast.
When you talk about the quality of coffee, everybody likes good coffee, but that's something that you guys have built into the whole philosophy, right? So as you're traveling the world curating coffee to be roasted and sold, you're only looking for, is it the top 1%?
Yeah, we only choose coffee rated in the top 1%. Coffee's graded on a scale just like wine is. It's
Who's
a 0 to 100.
It,
so there's a group called
Mr.
the
Coffee.
CQI and Juan Valdez.
Yeah. Those guys are in cahoots?
They are. You didn't see him. He was carrying them on his burro.
Does the burro get a vote?
The mountain.
No.
So there's a group called the Coffee Quality Institute, CQI, and they're the ones that really are the arbiters of that scale, and it's adjudicated by the Specialty Coffee Association of America. It used to be of America. Now it's just the SCA. They've merged with the European branch. So those two groups own that scale. And so coffee is independently judged when it's green and, again, when it's roasted on that scale.
And you're selecting only the top 1%, nothing else.
Yeah, the top 1% is millions and millions of pounds of beans in the world, but we choose from the top 1%. That's correct. We don't choose anything lower than that.
We have to take a break, but I have to tell you, when you use that pre-mixed creamer, sweetened creamer, it's about 100 calories for a tablespoon, and I pour like a quarter of the thing in there. So this is tasty enough to not use all those extra calories.
Fantastic. We hear that a lot.
I might go black from now on.
Yeah.
Once you go black, you know.
Go back.
I've heard that. All right. A quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee. I've had, I can't tell you how many cups of coffee in my life, and this is one of the best.
Agent Cooper from Twin Peaks, he enjoyed his coffee. Who doesn't? Pete Leonard is here, the visionary founder of I Have a Bean Coffee Company, along, of course, with Dane Neal. We were kidding earlier about the name of the company, not I Have a Bean, but Second Chance. But the reason behind this is a very, very good reason.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's Second Chance, not because we're giving a second chance to the coffee, but we employ men and women who have spent time in prison. So they have a felony conviction. On the record, and the number one issue they have when they get out is most places won't hire them.
Yeah.
If you can't find a job, how do you pay your bills?
Right.
What are you going to do? And that's why the recidivism rate is so high. Over 55% here in Illinois, about 60% on across the nation. So we employ post-prison men and women. It's not exclusive to that. But we strongly prefer that you can show us that you've got a felony.
You're doing a good thing. That's
that
a very
is
good thing.
Amazing.
We joked a little bit saying that not all of their employees have that kind of record, but they could aspire to. They're out there maybe rolling through some stop signs
right.
as
we'll
we speak.
We'll see what happens. All right, good.
We call them pre-felons. You never know.
What's your ultimate goal with this, Pete?
Yep, ultimate goal. That's a great one. So it's really twofold. We plan on expanding our roasting operations across the country. We built a micro-roasting plant that's in Wheaton. Mm-hmm. You can buy our coffee online at ihaveabean.com. That's why I have a bean, I have a dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's links to the same kind of thing. But our goal is 72 roasting plants across the country.
Oh, that's great.
Well, men and women are getting released from prison all across the country, and fortunately, people drink coffee all across the country. So we want them to have great coffee, and we want to employ post-prison people to do it.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please.
I know you're headquartered in Wheaton, but your headquarters should be in the Bean here in the city.
You know what? I'd love to have a shop, like a little sidewalk cart right across from the Bean.
I think inside a trap door.
Right. Think about it. It's a lot of space in there.
I could talk to the designer. Yeah, I like the trap door idea.
All right, not only is this an amazing thing that you're doing to help people who have been in prison and need a transition and need a job, this, honest to God, is the best black coffee I've ever drunk
Fantastic.
In my life.
Fantastic. Thank you.
It's not bitter. It's perfect. No more cream and sugar for me.
Nope. Well, those days are over.
There you go.
Dane, while we have you here, this is very exciting. This Saturday is the premiere of a new show here on WGN, and it stars you. Did you know this?
not just me.
They should have told you this.
But motorsports enthusiasts, race car drivers, car club members, families ready to take that road trip in the summertime. Anybody that loves to travel, it's going to be starring all of those people. I may just be the Ringmaster Ned from 2 till 4 on Saturdays for it. It's called On the Road with Dane. And it's going to be all of those things. So it's going to be, it won't be the kind of car show where people just call up and say, hey, this thing's making this rattly noise. What do I do? It's not like that. It'll be people sharing, whether it's race car drivers kind of sharing their lives off the track, or people that are notable that you know and love from so many different things, but have a really strong car connection. And then we'll highlight a lot of those communities that are doing those cruise nights and just great ways to experience the automobile throughout Chicagoland.
It sounds like fun.
It does sound. I didn't know you were such a car guy.
Oh, forever, right?
Forever.
Yeah.
Well, I've been riding in cars since before car seats, right?
I was conceived in a car, I think.
Nice. See, everybody's got a connection. Some are naughtier than others, but yeah. So
it
this
sounds great.
So this week we're going to have Guy Fieri, who's a longtime friend. Obviously, you know him as the star of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. And yes, he's rolling out in the 67 Camaro for every episode. But he's been the driver of the pace car at the Indy 500. He's been part of record-setting races at NHRA. He and I were just at the Daytona 500. Together a couple weeks ago. He's a huge car guy.
Yeah.
So he'll be sharing that along with his own family vacations, family road trip vacation, where we'll commiserate at the world's largest ball of twine, all that kind of stuff. Kevin Harvick, if you're familiar with Kevin Harvick, Bakersfield, California, one of the top stars in NASCAR. He'll talk about him partnering up with Cal Ripken Jr. to build ball fields all around for different youth, doing the people's work just like you, Pete.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have, I think, the village, I don't know if it's a village or city, I don't know if you can grow or change like that, but of Westmont, where they have a real unique community-wide approach to their cruise night, and it's become one of the biggest ones in Chicagoland.
Well, congratulations. That's big news. That's this Saturday from 2 to 4 right here on WGN.
2 to 4, on the road.
Very nice. It's Dane Neal and, of course, Pete Leonard from I Have a Bean. Pete, great to meet you.
Thank you very
much. Thanks for being here.
Great to be
Thank
here.
You.
We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.